You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 21st, 2022, and it's Sony, Nintendo, and a Kojima check-in.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games.
This conversation about video games.
Okay, so here's...
Not to be confused with another conversation about video games.
That's exactly what I'm going to say. Two things. Is it in poor taste to talk about other podcasts on your podcast? And is it in poor taste to say that they're bad?
No, I don't know. Of course not. I mean, look, if Kojima is involved, everyone's paying attention. I mean, people write about Kojima like it's the tabloid magazine, you know?
That is true.
We talked 2 weeks ago about, one of the news stories was Hideo Kojima was making his own podcast.
A Spotify original.
I completely forgot to listen to it, but you listened to it, and I wanted to check in. Yeah, so it's bad. What's the deal? What did he talk about? Episode one.
I mean, I'm being a little flippant, but it is. It's one of the versions of it that I expected. That the first episode was very much about like Hideo Kojima's super generalized topics of his creative process.
Yeah. He's just some like, I drank orange juice today, and
it's even more of like. It's this thing that happens a lot with Japanese developers where they tell a very sanitized version of the story where mm-hmm. It's like, well, we had many conversations about whether Snake should be stealthy or action oriented and people didn't understand it. And then I made a demo and they saw it and then we made the game. And it's like, okay, like something interesting is happening there. But it would have been really nice to hear a lot more about the actual arguments that you had behind the scenes when you were making the first Metal Gear game.
And what were the scrapped ideas and stuff? So was the context Metal Gear?
It wasn't all Metal Gear, but it was just more about a few things on his creative process. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to talk about is the format of this fucking crazy podcast. It is originally recorded in Japanese. Mm-hmm. And the way that they have dealt with this is they dub it with a translator. But the entire time you can hear Kojima speaking in Japanese underneath the dubbed track.
Oh, so it's like those news stories where like someone is reporting and then someone's talking over the report.
Yes, yeah. It's kind of like a UN conference or something like that. Like you can hear the person talking and then you hear the translator. And something about the audio mix is very distracting, you know, the way that they've balanced it and like how much is in the foreground and the background. And I've listened to plenty of podcasts where they do it. Like they kind of do it like, you know, they'll have the person start talking in their native language and they'll kind of duck it out. They'll kind of fade it out and then till it's gone usually.
Yeah.
And then they'll have the translator take over. Then maybe, you know, bring the original track back up here and there.
Yeah.
It's very rare that it's just straight up on the whole time. So you're listening to two tracks simultaneously. The translator unfortunately is not, I don't like him very much where mm-hmm. And I think what he's trying to do is really hit the timing correctly because, you know, the Japanese and English are so different. It takes different times to say the same thing. And so he's kind of spreading out some sentences to be slower and then speeding back up a little bit. And it's like, you just needed to edit this. You know, you're kind of doing, it's like a real time translation, except it's a pre-recorded podcast. So it's a very strange thing. The other thing is that there is a disembodied, kind of cybernetic sounding female voice who refers to herself as the brain, who kind of narrates the whole thing.
Wait, what? So there's like a persona that is someone that is not a person.
Correct. She's kind of like some sort of AI or something. And she's like, hello, I am the brain, and I am going to talk to you about Kojima-san's podcast. And so,
so she's like the host.
She's kind of like the host, yeah, or the audience surrogate, where like there is a point in the podcast where he's basically answering questions from the brain. And she's kind of positioning okay, it as like a call-in show almost.
This is the most Kojima thing that you've described thus far. Is like an AI robot asking Kojima questions.
It's a very Kojima podcast, which again,
so ostensibly this is Kojima asking himself questions.
Yes, but they do it under the guise of like it's kind of meant to be. It's almost like an email section, but it's just from the brain asking him questions, and then he kind of, you know, does a response to it or whatever.
Are they user submitted questions?
I was unclear. It's been a couple weeks since I've listened to it, so I'm an idiot. So I will listen to the second episode just to see what they continue to do with it. But there's just some major. I have some major, you know, we've been doing a podcast for a while. I'm still not that great at editing it, but I at least know enough about podcast construction to know that this is a pretty ramshackle podcast, just in terms of like the actual physical act of putting it together. Like it's crowded, it's busy, it's kind of tough to listen to just from an auditory perspective. And then it has Kojima's all these weird conceits in it.
Do you think Kojima's just not that interested in it? Because that to me would be the most disappointing thing. That it feels like an obligation on his part rather than an opportunity to genuinely interact with like the listeners or the material.
I don't know. I mean, he's the type of person that doesn't need to do anything that he doesn't want to do, though. So I have to. He's also obsessed with this idea of being worldwide. Where there was one interesting thing that he did say about kind of the popularity of Metal Gear Solid. And he was like, oh, well, it was the first game that launched, you know, worldwide in a simultaneous or close to simultaneous fashion. So like it was in all regions all the time on the PlayStation and internationally recognized, blah, blah, blah. And he talks about, we're putting this podcast out streaming globally, you know, like it's a big thing.
Yeah.
And so like he has some sort of obsession with some sort of with like a global reach, which I think is interesting coming from someone like him.
Well, it's a strand podcast, so it must be all inclusive.
I mean, you get the sense that he is probably in a way that actually is smart, and I'm just not picking up on it, but like he strikes me as the person who rightly so finds wonderment in just how global the world has gotten. And he looks at it as a point of pride that his games are global and his podcast is global. And he's having to translate his podcast because he wants it to come across to a global audience, blah, yeah. blah, blah, which I thought was interesting, but I wanted to hear even more about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a 30-minute podcast, so, you know, who knows what he's going to do next.
Well, at least you had Jeff Keighley's News Corner.
And then there was just a rant. Oh, man. God, he had a... Shoot, what did he call? He had a totally arbitrary, made-up name and segment for Jeff Keighley. It sounded straight out of a nonsensical Metal Gear name, too. Like, he was calling him something.
Otacon?
Something like that. It was even dumber. Like, it was just like a stupid acronym that meant nothing. And he was kind of like, do you see what I did there, Jeff? And Jeff was like, ha ha ha, yep, I sure do.
Even though they clearly weren't recording the same day. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the production quality is all over the place. Clearly, nobody is telling him no, because any, you know, Matt Gourley would have had a field day with this, right? You know, I mean, it's just, it just seems like he's in dire need of a producer, which I guess is the story of his video gaming career too. So, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but anyway, that's my Kojima check-in.
Well, on the positive side, you know, it's episode one. There's a lot of room to grow, you know?
Yes. So episode two seems to be all about the movie Nope. I have not listened to it yet, so I can report
that. I mean, that's the kind of concept that I'm looking for, right? Is like, just get his thoughts on something else. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll be insightful. Anyway, we're actually talking about some just recent updates, relatively recent updates. Nintendo did a Nintendo Direct. Sony did a State of Play. Yep. So we're going to talk about some of that news also, but I appreciate the update on Kojima.
Yeah, I listen, so you all don't have to.
Perfect. All right. Where do you want to start? Nintendo? Sony? Hop around?
I mean, maybe we hop around. I mean, my question for you is, do we start with the showstopper or do we save that?
We can start with the showstopper, I guess.
Because we know when we're going to be playing the next Legend of Zelda game.
We do indeed. And we saw some footage of it. I don't know what you thought about the footage.
It was like two seconds of new footage.
Yeah, it was like barely so bare bones.
Yeah.
It's like, it's mostly Link falling to his death and then being caught by like some weird airplane thing.
Yeah, that's about right.
I am currently playing like a D&D campaign that's set in like a floating sky. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool, like the aesthetic, but I was kind of struck by how much it just kind of looked like more Breath of the Wild.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what I was expecting, I guess. Maybe like a wholly different environment or something, but.
Well, I mean, it raises a lot of questions for me because it's clearly a, you know, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask sort of transition, you know, same art style, maybe even the same map. Like you could recognize some of the landmarks when he was falling closer to, you know, the ground basically.
Yeah. I was thinking that too.
But then it kind of made me nervous because that the Switch is really the little engine that could, but that hill is getting steeper and steeper. And the thing that I liked most about Breath of the Wild was the seamlessness of it.
Yeah.
And if you are slapping an entire world on top of your fully existing world, then it makes me a little nervous. Where how seamless is it going to be? Are there going to be disguised load times everywhere? Are there going to
stuttering as you move zones or something?
Yeah. And I mean, and lest we forget, the Zelda game directly before Breath of the Wild was Skyward Sword. And it was very similar to this in terms of look and feel, like a lot of skydiving, a lot of floating islands. I mean, and I stand by it that that game is the worst Zelda game, just flat out. And so it's kind of like we're kind of flirting with something that was not too good after flirting with something that was like one of the best games ever made. And so it's just, I don't know, I'm feeling a little whiplash.
Would you have any problem if there was loading, though? Like, I don't think that would be a huge... I mean, it breaks the illusion a little bit, but I don't know. I'd much rather have that than like weird quality issues, you know?
It breaks the illusion.
Because we see him jump, like, okay, so for context, we see Link jump from what looks to be like a floating island, and there's a bunch of like floating islands all around him.
Yeah.
And then it cuts, like it pointedly cuts
back
to like down to the regular Earth, and then it shows him falling again, but like closer to the surface.
Yeah.
So I feel like I could absolutely imagine a transition where there's the top world and then the bottom world and they're not actually linked at all.
I think that would be a huge bummer. The amazing thing about that game was if you start on the plateau and if you look out to kind of like the northwest of the map, you can see that crazy bird fortress flying around. You know, like, and if you wanted to, you could just walk from there to there.
Directly.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. And so.
And you get a sense of that in this trailer, right? Like, there's a couple of shots where you see like a massive fuck all island floating in the sky. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope they are able to pull that off in the same way where, like, if you're on the ground and you look up and you're like, that's the island I want to go to. You know, I want that to be the case. And I don't know. I'm of course super excited, but it reminds me of a little bit of Skyward Sword. It also reminds me a little bit of Wind Waker, where it was island based. You know, you were in the water, but like your whole thing was like there's massive stretches of ocean, and then you went on an island, and some of the islands were very big, and some of them were smaller, and there's a similar vibe, I think.
Yeah. When you first saw the title, did you think Tears of the Kingdom or Tears of the Kingdom?
I thought it was Tears just because all of those like Sheikah stones give tears out, you know, like when they're creating the map.
I feel like it was the only one. I saw the sky part and I thought the world was literally ripped in half. And I was like, Tears of the Kingdom. But okay, maybe that was just me.
Apparently, people who knew Japanese were able to look at the Japanese title and were like, oh, it's Tears. Because the words aren't the same.
Right. There's a little like drawing of an actual tear.
I mean, it's not a homonym, so like it's easier to see. It's not spelled the same, so I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. There wasn't much Zelda. I remember the first trailer, there was like Zelda and Link were together in that cave.
Yes.
And that was my thing that I said out loud, knowing it would never be the case of, you know, a cooperative Link and Zelda game. Yeah.
No, I mean, we can't expect Nintendo to innovate that much. Yeah. God, that still would be absolutely exhilarating.
I'm still highly excited, though. I mean, it's just, I feel like this game is all of a sudden a lot more riskier. Real? Just yeah. From a technical sense.
Sure.
And it makes me a little nervous, you know.
So this is coming out May 12th, 2023. So we still got a good chunk of time until it comes out. So I'm sure we'll get another trailer that'll show off a little bit more. I mean, Even for this being like, I don't know, I thought this would be a story trailer. Yeah, there's very little of a giveaway. So.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that was a huge deal for sure. All right, let's see. What else is going on?
We have a Pikmin 4 announcement.
I was just talking about Pikmin because... That Tinykin game came out.
Oh yes, yeah.
And some people were talking about it, and one of Sam's friends at school is actually playing it, so we might have to end up playing it.
You got to meet the demands of the schoolyard, you know.
Basically, I like Pikmin quite a bit, I've played all three of them, and I thought each one of them was actually better than the last. So
yeah,
I'm fairly excited for it.
I never played Pikmin 3, but I am also excited.
Yeah. I think what they continue to do with like the different classes of Pikmin and you know how it interacts with the world is cool, and I feel like they haven't given in to too much bloat. Those games are still pretty focused, which I also appreciate.
I mean, Miyamoto is designing that one, I believe, right? So I don't know. I
think interesting. Is he that he's heavily involved in?
I think he's heavily involved in Pikmin 4. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think he announced it, I believe, during the Nintendo Direct as well. And I think he's credited as the lead designer on it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he did the intro or whatever, but it must be so weird, you know, what he decides to be hands-on involved in versus not.
It's a good point. Yeah. Because, I mean, he could just be a floating head in the office if he wanted to be, you know?
I remember I read one of those Iwata Asks like long form articles one time, and the Nintendo devs were joking. It's basically the Japanese phrase of like flipping a table. It was like upsetting the tea table or something like that. And it was like, mm-hmm. when Miyamoto comes and looks at your game, he'll basically say a few things that essentially make massive changes to your game. Yeah. So everyone is nervous when he sits down to review their work.
But like in a good way, or like you need to change this, or in a like, oh, have you thought of that? And then they realize that it's way better.
I think it was a little bit of both, like where it was like,
oh, you're not going to tell Miyamoto... the man no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what the fuck do you know, Miyamoto?
Where's your resume?
Yeah, seriously.
It was more of a like, you just don't know. He'll say something and it will just kind of upset your entire plan, but it's probably the right thing to do. And so
the
developers are just kind of funny about that.
It's been the right thing. He's like 10 for 10, you know what I mean? Like there's not a whole lot of like real clunkers under his belt, right?
The ratio of like Zelda's to like Wii music is pretty good.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. I think this Miyamoto-san's on a roll, kids.
This kid's going places. Yeah.
What else was cool? You played Octopath Traveler, and there's a sequel coming, right?
I did. I never finished it, but I did enjoy it, and I like I like the look of this one, where they're doing a more, like, it's even more modern. Like, there's dudes wearing suits and trains and stuff like that, which there's even more of a kind of late Final Fantasy look to it, which I thought was cool.
I have not played a JRPG in so fucking long.
I mean, it's a pretty good JRPG. I mean, in terms of systems, like the way that the battle system works and, you know, how they set everything up. I liked it quite a bit.
I was thinking about playing a game like this recently because I was talking to a lot of people about the Steam Deck and the value of being able to play your Steam Deck while, you know, your partner is watching TV or something. Mm-hmm. And I find myself now playing a lot of computer games. Like I've been playing, you know, Cult of the Lamb on PC, and I've been playing the new Sam Barlow game on PC. And both of those experiences are fine, but I'm on my computer all day for work. And then I, you know, eat dinner, hang out with the family, and then I'm back to being on my computer. I am now finding myself longing for that Switch, laying down playing a game outside, maybe when the weather's nice, that kind of right. stuff. So
yeah,
maybe
having
maybe
a sexy rooftop deck party like we were promised on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, like, well, you know, drinking out of your Dixie cups or whatever those
were. Yeah, with my cool millennial friends. I mean, just you know, one game that I started playing that I didn't finish was Live Alive. It was that JRPG that they had put out. They
right.
They did the same treatment, the kind of you know, fancy 2D sprites, modernized treatment, same as Octopath, but for Live, and I didn't continue with it, but I did it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, Octopath comes out February, so in that yeah. big,
there's a lot of like stuff, kind of like early to mid 2023, which I thought was pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. Any other Nintendo stuff, or do you want to hop over to a couple of Sony things?
Let's see. I'm just kind of taking a quick look through. This is just because I'm kind of a nerd about how this stuff could actually happen, but I really am interested in the negotiations that got GoldenEye 007 on the N64 to their subscription service.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Microsoft owns Rare.
Yeah.
And MGM owns the GoldenEye IP, and Amazon owns MGM, and MGM's IP. And so you had potentially Nintendo, Microsoft, MGM, Amazon all having to figure out, can we properly license this thing in order to put it out again?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just think that would be very funny to see the negotiations behind the scenes.
I feel like this is always something that Nintendo is asked by the other two. Like, the other two say, hey, I wonder if Nintendo will relaunch this thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. They put a button, there's some other, you know, they keep chipping away at that N64 offering for their online stuff. You know, Pilot Wings, Mario Party,
yeah,
Pokemon Stadium, all of that stuff.
I still do not subscribe yet.
Me neither. I mean, what kind of maniac would want to play Mario Parties 1, 2, and 3, you know?
Yes, solo at home or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 64 rounds or whatever the fuck that they did.
Yeah, wild.
What's up in Sonyville?
Okay, we have a bunch of weeb games, Scott.
There's just oh, wait, a hold lot. On. One last thing on the Nintendo thing.
More
did
weeb
you notice,
games.
Speaking of weeb games, or should I say weed games, yes. Did you notice that there were like four different farming games?
Yeah, wasn't one, I'm confusing the, I think there was maybe one during the Sony as well, or maybe it was the Nintendo one, where it's like half JRPG, half farm.
Multiple farming games. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And I watched that, and it looked cool, but like, I don't know, man. It felt a little bit like make up your fucking mind, a little bit, like pick a lane, which is so weird, because I know that is like antithetical to what we've shared on the podcast before about combining genres, because what, it was like 6 weeks, maybe a couple months ago, we did a podcast about when genres converge, right? Yes, and like mapping those two. And you look at something like that and go, okay, at this point, we're just like double dipping. You know what I mean? We're trying. It's like how there's Fae seasonal.
Farm. That's what it was called. Fae
yeah,
farm.
Fae Farm. Yeah. It's like there's seasonal flavors, you know, where it's like, oh, what if Kit Kat, but it's actually peanut butter on the inside and
right.
and white chocolate on the outside. And like, we're just combining different things to see what happens.
Yeah, it's an experiment. Fae Farm. Harvestella.
Harvestella, I think, is the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Same. Yeah, same. I thought that one looked pretty interesting. And then there was a Harvest Moon game. I don't know if it was new or a remake or what. I just remember thinking that there's a lot of. Why did they put all of these in the same direct?
It's super weird. Like, and there's a demo available now for Harvestella as well. Like, there's. Yeah,
ooh,
there's
I should test it out.
I don't know. I mean, again, it is very. There's a lot of weeb games, and I don't know
you
what
you were talking
happened.
About a JRPG. Maybe this is the one. Maybe we play Harvestella.
And then I'm also like harvesting crops and stuff. I don't know, man. Yeah. There's no way I would ever finish this game.
Yeah, it's so strange. Like, what happened? Why are
what happened
all these
to what happened
right
to
now?
Me? Where like the aesthetics of JRPGs just became less interesting. You know?
I don't know. I mean, do you think it's the like? Do you think that it just converged to a point where it's not surprising or it's not eye-catching anymore? Because, I mean, I think something like Final Fantasy IX or something is still, you know, cool-looking.
I think what happened is I was just burned too many times with stories that were just woefully mediocre. Mm. And the moment or games that were woefully mediocre, and then the moment I see that aesthetic, I just assume...
You remember it.
One or both of those elements are going to be phoned in, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's also just hard to take seriously, right? Because, like, there is so much, like, weird... sexualized objectification. Like, you know, I was watching the trailer for Stellar Blade, which looks fine, but like, there's boob physics on display and just like outrageous outfits and, you know, huge weird monsters. And I don't know, like, there's just, it's hard to take seriously, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. I mean, it's hard to.
I don't think I've played a game with that aesthetic that to me really worked since Nier Automata.
Yes.
But I'm also not a JRPG aficionado. Like, there are people who exclusively play this genre, you know, or exclusively play, I don't know, games that are inspired by that genre.
And unlike Nier, I feel like you don't. It's mostly people apologizing for the look, and it's like, no, it's fine. You know, this is still a good game, you know, versus being able to fully stand behind it.
You know what it is, I think, also, is I just watch less anime these days. Also,
well, that's your problem.
Like, well, I mean, genuinely, when I was a kid, like, you know, when I was really into JRPGs, I was also watching anime, right? I would go and rent anime VHSs and like bring them home to like watch at home, right? Like, that is the genre that I was partaking in, and so it made sense that I'd continue that. I don't think I've watched anime in a while either. It's just one of those genres that, you know, is the first to cut as I lose time in my life.
We had to go behind the beaded section of the video rental store, not to get pornography, but to get anime.
Yeah. All this to say, Stellar Blade actually still looks pretty cool. It's just that aesthetic is, you know, quickly turns me off. So
yes, yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah. What else?
Sony. Sorry, I switched us from Sony, but I want to. There's a couple. I mean, like, let's talk about Stellar Blade. I mean, is that the has it hooked you? You know, is this something that you're gonna try out? Even though, like you said, the aesthetic is kind of tiresome. World. Yeah.
I mean, I think the monster design looks cool. If it feels tight these days, I just feel like I've become a weird obsessive about like just tight mechanics. Like, I just want things to feel clean and tight and responsive. I think Dark Souls has just really fucked me up, to be perfectly honest, over the years, you know. Elden Ring too. Like, I just, so, you know, you see a lot of blade slashing and stuff in this one. If it feels good, great. But it's hard to tell. Like, you can't watch that and know what the actual experience of playing is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it could be a, you know, a platinum game-like feel, you know, good platinum.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Bayonetta-style game. But yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I played, actually, one of those, I don't know what genre this is, stylish action, character action game or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It does look cool.
Yeah. And I don't know what this team has made before, also. Shift Up?
Yeah, I'm not familiar at all with the studio. But PS5 exclusive, so definitely one of those that kind of like gets you back onto that console, which we've both been talking about how there hasn't been a huge amount of exclusive stuff happening.
Well, speaking of that, actually, that might be a good benefit of picking up the, whatever they call it, I still don't know the fucking names, the Sony Pass, like PSN Plus.
PlayStation Plus Premium.
Yeah, whatever. Platinum, like, whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
Most of the Sony exclusives have been day one, so that could be an opportunity to check that out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So we had Ghost of Tsushima.
Yes.
And now we're getting this, and also really, like, we had Sekiro, which was kind of a ninja samurai-esque type of game.
Yep.
And now we're having Rise of the Ronin. I mean, we're like in a ninja renaissance here? Like, what's happening?
A ninja-sance? A Ronin? Yeah. Ronin-essance?
A Ronin-sance?
I think of everything that I saw from State of Play, this game looks the fucking sweetest.
Because it's wild. Like, it's... Do we know anything about it? I mean, it's the DOA team.
It's
or the Ninja Gaiden team.
Ninja Gaiden team. Well, and they made Neo, and I don't know your thoughts on Neo. Did you ever play that? I think you played some of the first one, right?
Oh yeah, I played it. I never finished it, but I was more. It was one of those games that I was very impressed by, but I had to walk away.
So that's why I think this looks so promising to me because what we've seen looks really Western in its sensibilities. Where I don't think Neo was all that much. Like, there was a lot of crunch to Neo. It was a very game. I think it was a gamiest game nominee that year. because it was
it had
very...
like three different stances. Like, yeah, hell yeah. Yeah. Like, there was so much depth to that thing.
So much depth, so much gaminess. It was, but it was tight, right? Like some of the experiences in Neo felt fucking great. It felt better than, what's that? Now I'm forgetting.
Sekiro.
Yes, felt better than Sekiro in many ways. Like I really enjoyed that experience, but the lore, the world didn't really work for me. It was probably too crunchy. So at some point it became really like cumbersome, especially as I... as someone that like will take a break of a week or two and then try to come back,
it
felt really difficult to grasp. When I'm when I watch this Team Ninja trailer for Rise of Ronin, it looks like it has the Ghost of Tsushima sensibilities, right? We see the Ronin riding on horseback through this like open world, the really awesome scene where they're like sword fighting, and you see like a deflection. To me, tells me that they're bringing in some of that quick action, responsive, tight controls that Neo had, that Ghost of Tsushima also has, but the windows are way wider, right? Like Ghost of Tsushima is far more accessible. So I think this could be a real fucking winner, because if it can bridge that gap between, you know, open world, the open world of open worlds that Ghost of Tsushima was, but just a slightly like tighter gameplay experience in terms of like combat, I think it could be really neat.
It's also just a super cool setting, you know, 19th century Japan, you know, the intersection of the modern world and the traditional world, you know, the feudal Japan and the imperialist West kind of colliding. Like that shit's just cool. I mean, that's just a cool setting to have a story in.
Which we don't see much of. Like even looking at things like Assassin's Creed, which some people were comparing this to, which is weird if you ask me, but like, you know, we tend to be in Western historical settings or the Middle East, I guess, in the case of Assassin's Creed. It's rare to get that time period for sure. Also, the execution that he does with the fucking rifle blade.
Yeah.
Oh, so cool. I mean, that's...
It's a high... What was the couch co-op multiplayer samurai gun?
Yeah,
samurai gun feel.
Yeah. Because that shit to me felt like John Wick, you know, like a Ronin samurai John Wick. Yeah.
All right. What else? Anything else on the PlayStation that we should hit on?
There was a game that I couldn't really tell what it is. Pacific Drive. Did you watch this trailer?
Oh, yeah. That game looked like someone really liked the first season of X-Files, basically. And there's a game about it now, you know, like kind of mysterious Pacific Northwest style freakiness happening.
But you largely drive. Is that what you got?
I mean, that was most of the trailer anyway, which it was kind of interesting. And you know, the title, obviously, Pacific Drive, you know, double meaning, I suppose.
As a resident of the Pacific Northwest now, I'm jazzed. I think this looks cool. Fun little indie game. I'm like always surprised.
Over under on Bigfoot sightings.
Oh, I mean, at least, right? They say that there's like cryptids abound or whatever, so I'm in. I'm always a little bit surprised by these states of play, because I don't know about you. We've had a few this year. Every single one felt really bare bones, like not a whole lot to show off.
Yeah.
This one included. Yeah. Like, you know, there's some good stuff in here. I think this is probably one of the ones that afterwards was more interesting to me because of some of those titles. But they've been pretty bare bones, and it's a little bit weird. So it's nice to see things that I'm not fully expecting pick my interest, you know?
Well, and they're, I guess it's not totally the case. Like Rise of the Ronin isn't until 2024, but there's a fair amount of 2023 games out there. And, you know, we're in the end of, towards the end of September now. So like, at least it's not, I feel like there was a couple state of plays, like the one where they showed the Wolverine clip where it was like just a CG trailer and they didn't even
just
have
his,
a year
just
on
his
it.
Like hand, right? It's like just his claw hands or whatever.
And it was like, hey, we might be thinking about making a Wolverine game. Stay tuned. And it's like, that's just, it's not as compelling when it's clearly so early in the process. Whereas at least this stuff is getting, you know, relatively confident sounding dates, you know, mostly next year.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing that we aren't really going to talk about is the God of War trailer, because both of us chose not to watch it.
It's still weird to me in my mind that game is still not coming out this year, but it is. And we're pretty close to it. I mean, what, we're a month and a half away?
Ooh, I should take a day off. Speaking of holidays. Just
get through it. I should take a day off and ignore the children in favor of crying about a story about children.
That's right. That's
the responsible thing.
You're training. It's practice, you know?
It's like, why is dad throwing axes in the backyard? I don't know. Just stay inside.
I just really hope that it's not like a super awkward, you know, tween story of his kid.
What's his name? Atreus.
Atreus, yeah.
He now goes by Trey.
Yeah. Oh, my God. 100%.
He says things like, no cap.
Yeah. He laughs. Kratos tries to fit in by dabbing, and it's just like, that's not, we don't do that anymore, God. Dad.
And he, and Trey, show me how to dab, boy. Sus.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Fucking Zoomer Atreus is my new favorite character.
They did show a cool controller, I guess.
If you want some runes on your controller.
Do you think that they'll turn into wolves? I feel like there's some animal. There's some, got to be some gameplay nod to the wolves on the center of that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
If they're gonna warg out in this one.
I was trying to analyze, and I was like, is there like something to the symbols that like the, maybe they make up like a fireball thing? I don't look. I don't know.
I mean, there, it is supposed to be the tale of, you know, Fenrir eating, waking up and starting to up the world, right? I mean, so I guess there's probably some sort of, you know, oh, who's going to destroy the world? Is it, is Kratos going to try to do it? Or is he going to save Atreus? Because Atreus is Loki, so like, you know, he's the one that's supposed to be responsible for all that. So
yeah,
and that is interesting.
Yeah. So I'm glad I'm not watching the trailer because, you know, I want to go in clean. Get that fresh experience.
I mean, I've already, like, you know, I've seen enough. I know I'm gonna play the game. I might not play it with this, you know, undoubtedly highly priced controller, but I'll muddle through somehow.
Yeah, exactly. $70 for controllers, man, that's wild.
I mean, and that's after they had already advertised that that pro controller too.
I know. Yeah.
So it's not even, it won't even, this one won't even get me paddles. So like, come on.
Yeah. If I can't rub the back and interact in so many different ways, come on.
If I can't pet the in-game wolf by using the back paddles of my controller, then why did I spend $150 on
this? Can you pet Fenrir? That's the question we all demand.
Is he a good boy?
Is he a good boy? Can you feed him biscuits?
All right, I think that's a fair amount of news stuff happening. And then the Nintendo stuff is all pretty, either coming out at the end of the year or the beginning of the next year too. So it feels like things are smoothing out a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Finally.
Okay. I guess we'll leave it there for this week. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And you can of course find us at experiencepoints.net and wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, leave us a review or tell a friend.
Don't tell Kojima that I was talking shit about his podcast.
Oh, he fucking knows, baby.
Do it at a lot. Yeah. He's listening to me right now. The brain is going to really just destroy me in the email section.
I haven't seen Nope, podcast. So I'm probably going to skip that. But let me know if he spoils it.
That's a good point. I haven't seen it either, but I'm still going to listen to the show. So yeah. I'll let you know.
Alrighty.
All right. Cool. As always, everyone, thanks for listening. And we'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.